And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to SaaS, the Screen, Air and Stage Show, the show where we delve into the entertainment industry and see what's happening, what's coming up and what there is to analyse. I'm Nick Angus.
And I'm Hannah Schauder. Thank you so much for tuning in to our 10th podcast episode.
We are at our 10th episode. It has been a big season, stretched out over quite a few weeks, but we're very honoured to be bringing you our 10th episode, 46th episode of SaaS in general. That's an awesome thing to say, Hannah, I think.
Super exciting. And when deciding the theme of this week's show, we were thinking, you know, in previous seasons we've done a lot of genre themes, different kinds of film, television and theater. Well, you know, so much has changed. And maybe it's time that we take a look at that.
Maybe it's time we look at the SaaSolution, which is the evolution of the entertainment industry through the generations.
I love that. I know, where's that, like,
we really need to put in sound effects for that.
I feel like it. So this episode's actually going to be split into two parts. So this episode we're going to be looking at genre and themes, and next episode we're going to be looking at acting.
It'll be really good to do that. We haven't actually done this before where we've had two episodes, which are split obviously, but are kind of discussing the same idea. But with this podcast season, we're really delving into more niche themes and analysing things in detail that we may have addressed earlier in other episodes throughout our first three seasons. So to split up this into two episodes will be really fun, I think, and I'm very much looking forward to getting into it.
Absolutely. So I think let's just get straight into it.
Let's dive into it. So our first point we're going to be discussing today, Hannah, and looking at the evolution of the entertainment industry is the evolution of the subgenre. Now, a subgenre is something that has been introduced over the many decades, but they have been introduced to sit under a dominant genre or theme, and they add potential for further exploration on a more tightly focused idea. And over the decades, or no, not over the decades, over the year of SaaS, I'm getting ahead of myself, we have spoken about many subgenres and their relevance to their accompanying genre and how they help each other and how they differentiate as well. So I think this is really cool to look at particular subgenres and see how they've grown from their own genre.
But I think also how it has influenced the genre that it's derived from.
Definitely, definitely. So we've got a couple here, and these are some of our favourites, if not favourites, ones that we've spoken very much about on the show SaaS. And our first one is a classic. Everyone loves it. It is the rom-com or the romantic comedy. And this, look, the funny thing about this one is, does it derive from comedy or does it derive from romance? That's a question that we may not be able to answer today, but what we know is that this is a really popular subgenre that we have seen develop quite significantly over the years.
Do you think?
It really has, I think. It's grown. I think that's probably the biggest thing about it. It's grown. It's becoming so, so popular.
Yes.
And it's just continuing on an incline. I think one thing that's interesting to pinpoint about this subgenre, though, is that creativity is really hard with it because so much content around it is coming out. I think it would be really hard for filmmakers to be like, how can we change it up a little bit, or how can we add something fresh to this storyline?
Absolutely. And I think it's also now made it more difficult for more romantic movies to not have that comedic element. Even if it's not, you know, classified as a romantic comedy, I think filmmakers now feel like whenever they're doing a romantic storyline, you need a bit of like a funny factor.
Exactly. And I think even on that note, Hannah, then a lot of people think that rom-coms are their own genre, and I would argue that they probably even are. They are classified as a subgenre, but because they're becoming so popular,
so much,
and because, as you say, most romantic films or TV series we see these days, they have some sort of comedic element or backbone. You could argue then that, okay, the rom-com is basically a genre on it of its own. So that is one, and that is a classic. Another one that we've spoken about is the biopic, which is derived from the drama. And we're seeing this very evidently, especially in the past few decades, really, really prominent in how many films on the biopic realm are coming out.
Yes, definitely. I think even this year in particular, where a biopic has even grown more to like celebrity.
Definitely, yeah.
It's grown into the celebrity world, where we've seen with Bohemian Rhapsody and with Rocketman, which we did a deep analysis on. You can check that out on omnistudio.com. You can listen to that episode. But yeah, you know, with movies like that, there's one about Elvis Presley, which is coming out, Aretha Franklin, which is coming out. So I feel like the biopic, it's now sort of grown into other, almost like non-film related areas.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like we're going into like the music industry, but also history.
Yeah.
I watched a fantastic movie yesterday called Charlie Wilson's War, which is a biopic about Charlie Wilson, who was a US congressman, which assisted in helping Afghanistan against the Soviet Union, you know, which is you know, you wouldn't, it's like a normal war film, for example, but it became a biopic
exactly.
in and of itself.
And because it's such a phenomenon these days, everyone's kind of looking to do it now. So any film that they're producing or television series, if they can weave in some sort of truth or some sort of biopic element, it's going to attract people because that's what everyone's kind of talking about at the moment. And it'll be really cool to see in 10 years' time whether they're still at its popularity that it is today. And that's something that we're definitely going to wait and see. Another one under the drama realm is the teen genre. And we spoke about this on a couple of episodes. But the teen genre really hit its peak in the 1980s with John Hughes' films of The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, and that's when it really hit off. In the early stages of cinema, the teen genre didn't exist, and it probably wasn't until James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause that it actually started to exist, and people were like, this is a outlet and this is a generation that we don't focus on, and we need to focus on the teens.
Definitely.
So, and then, so that was kind of one that hit it off, but it wasn't really until the 1980s where it really took shape. And now these days we're seeing it as popular as ever. We've had Booksmart just released recently. Yes. Great teen film.
And I think also teen has really blended really nicely with other genres.
Definitely.
Such as Glee, for example, you know, where like it's teen musical. We've had like Riverdale, for example, where it's like teen drama as well, or teen horror.
Yeah.
So I think it has been nice to see that teen has become quite malleable in terms of other genres, other styles of shows. I think it's been nice as well because it's also led to evolutions in audiences too.
Definitely.
Where the teenage audience, I think, has become much more involved in television specifically.
Yeah.
Also film, but, you know, it's become much more interactive. It's not just, you know, oh, you can watch this, you know, you can watch one movie.
Exactly.
Now it's much more interactive.
Definitely. And our last one, which I'll pinpoint, is a psychological thriller. So instead of just the action film or the thriller film, it's a psychological thriller. And these have been really popular as well these days. I think the common trend amongst all these that we've mentioned is the increase in popularity at specific stages. So obviously the teen, the 1980s, the biopic, I would say in the last two decades. The romantic comedy, I think that's been quite steady, but there have been certain peaks. I would even say the 1990s, there was a really strong peak in the rom-com.
Yes.
And the psychological thriller, I would say probably in the past two decades as well. So quite recent peaks in popularity. But, you know, we've seen this with Gone Girl and also The Good Lie, which is an upcoming film as part of the British Film Festival. So that's also a really popular subgenre.
And I think that's
as
also...
as part of the thriller or action.
Definitely. And I think psychological thriller has also become a nice complement to other sorts of films. I think about like Inception, for example, where it combines that kind of psychological thriller element as well. I mean, I'm thinking about Leonardo DiCaprio because who isn't? But you know, things like Shutter Island as well.
Yeah.
Even Revolutionary Road, which is one of Leonardo DiCaprio's older films, but has quite a psychological thriller element to it as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's been nice to see psychological thrillers not only as its own independent subgenre, but almost becoming a complement.
Definitely.
And I think, you know, where lots of horror films are now starting to add that psychological element to it as well, like The Girl on the Train, for example. So it's quite nice. I think my ongoing theme with all of these subgenres is that maybe rather than change, they've actually just grown in significance in relation to the genres they've derived
from. Definitely. I think it's a good point. And yeah, it'll be, again, I said this before, with the biopic in particular, where it's going to go in the next 10 years, are we still going to be seeing huge popularity with these? And I think we will. But there's a fundamental question at the end of the day is that how can we be creative with them?
Yes.
Because renewing or recycling same content, it's good because people enjoy it, people are used to it, people are familiar with it. But at the end of the day, we want something new.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of that tightrope. We love a tightrope.
We do love a good tightrope.
It's that tightrope of saying, how can we pay tribute to what this subgenre or genre is and not lose that sentiment, but how can we kind of add our own creative flair?
Yeah, I think this definitely comes back to a much discussed debate on SAS, which is this idea of authenticity.
Yeah.
How can we maintain our authenticity in the face of change, but also in the face of entertainment as well?
Yes.
It'll be interesting. It gets me thinking now on, there's a lot of new Christmas rom-coms coming out.
There is.
Where, you know, it's the feedback's been very mixed because some people are like, oh my God, yes, Vanessa Hudgens is in another Christmas movie. Other people are saying, we've done so many movies like this already. We just want something new.
Exactly.
So it'll be really interesting to see, I think also with biopics, because obviously biopics are going to be about people from our generation in the future. It'll be really fascinating to see what kind of biopics are going to be targeted more. Maybe they'll stay away from music because who knows if we're going to have any big names later on.
Definitely.
Maybe, there probably won't be many war-based biopics.
You just don't know the shifts that can happen. And even kind of the shift from film to television in the case of biopics, maybe they'll go to the television scene and stretch, because that has happened with a few people and a few celebrities that they've actually gone to the television medium and they've stretched out the story on there. So it's just, you don't know which direction it can go. And even though sometimes, you know, you think, oh yeah, I think it will go this way, it can actually end up going the opposite direction that you would think it would go.
Absolutely. And I think in terms of just genres in general, we're seeing a lot of genre blending. I think of, you know, Quentin Tarantino's latest film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes.
That was a massive mix of genres, you know, not just with romantic comedies as well, but where they're, you know, getting added on to, you know, spy films or more sort of drama films. And be interesting to see if maybe we might get to a point where it'll be hard to completely differentiate genres. So many times now when you go into Netflix and you look at a film, like, you know, where you pick a film and it has all of its information, when it has the line of like genre, it usually lists more than one now.
Exactly.
You can't actually, you can't box one movie into one genre. It's been now a blend.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the biggest evolution with genres, is that we're actually now getting to a point where we can't keep genres to its own paradigm.
You've raised a really good point, Hannah, because even if you think about the Western or the sci-fi genres, they're popular. And yes, films and television series are still being made, but not as common to a couple of years ago or a couple of decades ago when there were just sci-fi films, just Western films. I think you've got a good point. And it's, go see it for yourself. Go on IMDb or any other film television website, type in a favourite and just see how many tags it has, because it might have drama, comedy, romance, thriller.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay,
how does that all exist in the one movie?
Exactly.
And then
it's a really good point.
But yeah, and I think I'm actually really enjoying this kind of blend now where filmmakers don't feel afraid to be confined to the rules of their own genre.
Yes.
You know, so what if I want to throw a bit of romance into my drama film but also have some kind of sci-fi element to it as well?
Exactly.
Especially TV.
Yeah.
Too. I think television's become much more relaxed in terms of its genre too.
Definitely.
Especially when you go onto Netflix. You know, I'm coming back to Netflix again. But when you're on your homepage and you're looking through the different options they have, you know, it's like US drama TV shows. There is somewhere I'm like, that's not a drama TV show. But then you go onto it and it's like, oh, well, it is. It
You've
also belongs
element.
To that genre. So
lots of food for thought here. And if you have any ideas or opinions on this, get in touch with us on all our social pages. Our main one is facebook.com/sass. So get in touch with us then, because extending the conversation outside the rooms of radio is always good. And
Definitely.
We always are up for a chat. So get in touch with us. But I think we can move on to our next kind of evolution in regards to
Let's evolve to the next
stage.
Topic. Yeah.
In regards to genre and themes, this is a bit of an interesting one, which we're going to call the 360-degree notion. And it's when we have returned to or stayed with, and I'm not going to say old-fashioned, but film and TV stylistic techniques that we may have seen more commonly in the past. Now,
Did you coined this term yourself?
I made it up.
Oh my god, you've got to put this straight in the dictionary. That's like a legit, that sounds like a proper theory. Let's write a book about this.
Let's write a book. Okay. Stay tuned.
We'll be back once SAS has evolved into a publishing company.
Look,
back to the topic.
Let me know what you think, because it might make no sense. But an example is the film Roma. Now, this was a film that actually had lots of success at the Oscars this year, and it is actually a film in black and white. Now, if we think about the early stages of cinema in the early 1900s, all films were in black and white. And so it's funny to be like, if you saw a film in 1918 and then you see a film in 2018, 100 years later, and it's in black and white, we've kind of done this 360 and
totally.
We're returning to these original mediums. And in the case of Roma, it was really cool how they had this black and white aesthetic to it.
Definitely.
So I think this is an evolution in that we've progressed, but then we've also returned and we've taken what we've learned from that progression and then taken these older techniques or older stylistic or technical features and then kind of merge them together. It's really cool.
No, absolutely. And I think about other filming techniques such as it's like sort of the handheld camera technique.
Yes.
You know, where it's not a proper professional camera. You know, it's like someone's holding it and following someone, or one scene's all in one take, for example. There's no jumping between. I think, Nick, you were telling me about a technique that Christopher Nolan still uses.
Yeah. So I was reading a really interesting article on complex.com. So you can definitely find it. It's called Three Major Filmmakers Who Are Bringing Back Old School Techniques. And in this article, it talks about how Christopher Nolan learned how to use single camera shooting. So just using one camera to shoot each scene or each facial expression, each conversation. And he's still doing it. And this is quite an old technique. Obviously, these days with our advance in technology, we're being able to use multiple cameras and multiple equipment to shoot scenes, but he's sticking with the one. And this is really interesting. This is another evolution where he's kind of got all this accessibility of all this new technology, but he's returning to that older fashioned method.
Definitely.
And he said, so I'm taking a quote from this article, that shooting single camera means I've already seen every frame and it's gone through the gate because my attention isn't divided. So he's very much talking about having focus on everything he's doing and not saying, oh, what's that camera filming when I'm actually looking at this one? So, yeah, it's an interesting method. And it's cool when you see directors adopt these older methods.
Yeah, it also makes me think of, again, Quentin Tarantino with that sort of like noir.
Yeah, film noir, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And like implementing that a lot in his movies too.
Yeah.
Also gets me thinking, I don't know if this is an older technique, but it definitely felt like it to me in Quentin Tarantino's The Hateful Eight.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of the movie, it takes place in the one set, in the one location. And that felt quite old to me of we're not jumping between multiple places where it's all taking place in the one thing. I actually want to quickly delve to the side for
delve
a quick moment
because
I feel like we're neglecting theatre a little bit here.
Yes.
I've definitely seen this older style of theatre much recently as well, of this idea of very minimalist setting. And Nick, we've talked about this a lot with a lot of plays that we've seen where it's just a few simple props and that makes up the entire set. Or, you know, they'll use the one set as multiple locations, for example.
Yes.
And I feel like theatre is really coming back to that idea of, you know, very minimalist setting, much more script and actor based.
Yep.
I think one play, this is a totally niche play that Nick and I went to see a couple of months ago called Wrath. And
yes.
It was part of a festival.
Melbourne Fringe Festival, yes.
That's right. And the play was pretty much, it was just a couple of props, I think just a few chairs and some really interesting costumes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the play was totally carried by the actors and the power of the script. And, you know, so I think we are kind of, especially with theatre, coming back full circle of being much more minimalist and being much more screenplay based.
It's almost that kind of, so I think we could say, looking at what we've discussed here, it's a bit of a contradictory statement of progressing to the minimalist. So you're progressing, you're learning, but then you're actually going more minimalist. And this is only in some circumstances, like in Wrath with Christopher Nolan and his single camera shooting with those kind of specific examples. And with Roma, going back to the black and white, it's kind of you're progressing and you're evolving, but you're actually going back to this minimalist approach that we're seeing in the early stages of cinema making, TV making, theatre making.
Question, what do you think this says about today's audience? Do you think this is, you know, these, you know, quote-unquote changes, but really just kind of reverting back to these old ways? Do you think that's because that's what the audience wants? Or do you think that's because the audience just hasn't, because they haven't experienced those older techniques, they've actually evolved to that point?
Ooh, love to put me on the spot, don't you? I think it's a bit of both. I think from the filmmaking or the theatre directing perspective, it's about them wanting to kind of pay tribute to the past and what has been done in the past, and also adding that creative flair because they want to be different. And so sometimes doing something that hasn't been seen for a while, it's kind of that point of difference.
Yes.
But then from the audience as well, I think they're also wanting something fresh and new, and they're kind of wanting to experience something that they're not familiar with or even comfortable with. So when you have, what tends to be the case when you have a minimalist set in the theatre, this is not always the case, but tends to be, there'll be much more focus on acting, performance and audience interaction.
Yes.
Because they don't have that set to kind of engage the audiences. So they've got to do it another way, and it's through the acting and performance. So I think it's also about creating spaces and environments that are not familiar and also sometimes uncomfortable. And that's really important because that's how theatre and film and television also can influence us and make us think. So I think it's a bit of a both sides. I think from the producing side, they're wanting to kind of make something fresh and make something that's different and make something that might be different to what normally people normally see. But then from the receiving end, it's kind of about kind of being encapsulated within that space that, might be unfamiliar or even uncomfortable. I've gone off a bit of a tangent there.
No, but good answer.
What about you, Hannah?
I really liked that idea. Oh, that's really difficult. I think it's more I think maybe kind of building off what you said, I think it's sort of a reflection of what filmmakers want to evoke in audiences.
Yes.
And bringing back a lot of these, you know, because obviously these are older, but they're also unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And, yep. you know, for us, if we watch a black and white film, we're going to be like, oh, well, this is old, or, you know, I'm not used to this. I want to see this in color. I think it's a really nice way to kind of shock audiences a little bit and open up our minds a little bit more.
Definitely.
We're really used to now very overly saturated, overly edited, multiple camera angle kind of films.
Yeah.
And I think we've become almost a little bit too used to it.
Yeah.
A bit too comfortable with that kind of style of filmmaking where it's really dependent on the editing. And then we're faced with a film where it's in black and white, or it's a really long scene, or it's a much longer runtime, I think is also another technique, or there's subtitles or whatever.
Mm.
It really forces us to try to understand the movie better and also understand what that was like when it first came out,
exactly.
or when that style was first introduced.
And just another point on this, Hannah, you've just made me think, I think, in the filming realm specifically, even in the TV realm as well, for instance, when they kind of do this black and white scale or black and white filter to a film, it almost subconsciously makes us aware and makes us appreciate the techniques and stylistic features more, because we're like, wow, this has been a conscious effort to make this black and white. So not only are you appreciating that and what they're doing with the camera, what they're doing with the scene, but then you look at films that use heavy CGI and heavy saturation, you're appreciating what they're doing there as well, because you've seen that huge difference. Because
Absolutely.
A lot of films these days, as you say, they're very similar in their stylistic, you know, stylistic elements. But when you have a film that really juxtaposes that, you can be like, wow, now you can see how to appreciate both.
Definitely. And that does, you know, present really nice contrast, but also really nice variety in the entertainment we consume.
Definitely.
And some people are, you know, maybe some people just prefer that style. And
yeah.
so that's what they've wanted and that's what they're given and they're happy with it.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it makes it really flexible for all audiences and introduces us back. But that was a good discussion.
That was a hefty discussion.
We do love a hefty discussion. And on that note, I actually want to quickly touch on something before we wrap up, because I know we were just talking about this 360 idea coming back to old styles, but what about touching on how this 360 has actually evolved the portrayal of themes in the entertainment industry? We've spoken about themes a lot, and, you know, not just, you know, when they occur, but also how they've evolved in, you know, in all of our different forms of television, film and theatre, and just how those changes in, you know, technique have actually evolved the themes itself.
It's an interesting point you raised, Hannah.
Which is super niche.
It is super niche, but I think it's definitely relevant to touch on, because we've spoken about the evolution, as you said, of the kind of the techniques and the genre and the subgenre at the start of the episode. So looking more at themes and looking at kind of that, 360 idea, it'll be interesting to argue whether, you know, there are certain themes that maybe have kind of come back to the point where they were initially discussed and how they were initially discussed. Are there any themes that stand out to you that you've seen a really big progression, or that you've seen kind of do that 360?
Ooh, that's a good question. For some reason, revenge is the first thing that comes to mind.
Yep.
And how the manifestations of revenge have really evolved in film through the decades, where it hasn't been as simple as, oh, he murdered my father.
Yep.
You killed my father, prepared to die. You know, this isn't like a, you know, an eye for eye, tit for tat kind of thing. We've seen pieces like Heathers, for example, where it's much more, revenge is much more complex, or, you know, again, films like Hateful Eight, where ideas of revenge, they take on many forms for many reasons, sometimes historical, sometimes personal. And, you know, and that, you know, can also be through those older techniques, but also actually coming back to genre to kind of bring this all together, that genre blending, how that also influences the themes portrayed.
Yeah.
Heathers is a really weird mix, because it has a bit of comedy, even though it's a drama, but it's also kind of a thriller.
It has a bit of everything, as you say.
Everything, and then that morphs how they convey those ideas of revenge and pettiness.
Yeah.
And even teens, you
know, definitely.
As well. So I quite like that idea. Do you have any themes in mind?
Well, I think one concept that we may have seen more often is kind of genres aligning with themes that may have not aligned before, as you were kind of saying then. So we might have a sci-fi genre, and then we might have a theme of kind of love or lust. And it's like, look, they're quite different.
Yes.
But they might have joined. Now, I can't think of an exact example at the
moment. I've got an example.
Okay, I've got an example, ladies and gentlemen.
I've got an example. Passenger, which is...
Passengers.
Passengers. Love which it. I think is 2015.
I think it was
Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt, I think.
Bingo.
And which is also like kind of a bit of a weird sci-fi film.
I love it. Yeah, it's a good idea.
But yeah, really, you know, it's a purely sci-fi idea, but then it... you know, brings in that kind of romantic storyline as well, which, yeah, as you say, would not go together at all.
Yeah, because I think the ones that you'd be common to see is kind of a sci-fi with maybe danger or then a Western with kind of adventure or a romance with lust and love. Yes. So you kind of, they're the common ones, but now we're kind of seeing not only shifting within the genre realm, but shifting between the genre and its relationship to the themes.
Yes. Absolutely. You've also made me think of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again.
Ooh.
With that kind of satirical view of Western as well.
Yeah.
And maybe not so much in terms of the themes, but just like how the themes reflect genre.
Definitely.
That makes sense as well.
Yeah.
So it is really interesting. And I do like implore you, like listeners, to when you're watching a film, have a think about, you know, the themes that are being conveyed to you. What, you know, what is that a result of? Is that because of the storyline? Is it actually because of challenges in the genre itself? Has that been intentional as well? I've just suddenly thought of one more really random example. I don't know where all my examples are coming from today. But at the moment, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is playing on stage in Melbourne at the moment at Her Majesty's Theatre. And I went to go see it. And I was really surprised with some of the themes that were portrayed. There was a lot of themes of almost deceit and manipulation.
Which is not common to the...
Not at all.
Or not familiar, at
least. You know, there's an element of horror in it as well. And, you know, also quite... This almost sounds really depressing, but like themes of like broken dreams or unfulfilled dreams, I felt like was quite a prominent theme as well.
Yeah.
And also like evolution of people. You know, what's meant to be a very lighthearted musical and really fun, which was a film, well, you know, film to theatre, actually conveys much darker themes than one would realise. So definitely coming back to your idea of kind of misaligning theme to genre.
Yeah. And I think that's fun, and that would be fun for filmmakers or theatre directors or TV producers to kind of have fun with that. There are risks, obviously, because sometimes they might just not align and they're trying to evoke something. It's like that. You just don't get the connection or the emotional investment. It's like it's a good try, but you don't get that. So it is a risk, but I think it would be really creative to kind of look at, pick out a genre, pick out a theme, or even, you know, play a game at home, like put genres in a hat, put themes in a hat, pick two out and see what a theme or
that actually would be so fun. Like, what movie would you make?
I think that's a
good idea.
That's
a really cool idea.
You could even argue that that's what's happening now because that's how to be creative, that's how to be fresh, that's how to be new.
I actually think that's almost a really nice, like that's a really nice point to finish at is at the end of the day, like, the biggest evolution in terms of genre and theme has been the risks that filmmakers are trying to, pursue.
Yes.
And how can, you know, and I think it's been really nice to see entertainment that's really strayed away from the paradigm and has really not tried to, you know, fulfill any expectations in terms of genre or theme or, you know, just because it has this storyline doesn't mean it has to have this outcome or has this theme. I think that's been like almost the biggest change, that there's just been more risks. It's just been more daring.
Exactly.
I think that's really exciting. And I think, again, we will lead to more changes in the future as well.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we'll have to see.
As I say, the bigger the risk, the bigger the reward. So we'll have to see what rewards come about in the future.
That's a really nice way to finish off. And on that note, we're going to end part one of the Sassolution. Dun, dun, dun. Stay tuned for a cliffhanger. Well, stay tuned for the conclusion to this cliffhanger. This is the You have stay tuned.
We've lost the audience.
We have.
They've left.
That's it. They're already gone. Thanks for sticking around. But this is the cliffhanger. So, I mean, but a great way to finish off in terms of, you know, leaving our audiences, have a good think about, you know, in terms of genre and theme. And this is going to play really nicely into part two when we look more at acting and character.
And performance.
And performance as well. And, you know, and how these changes in genre and theme ultimately influence the characters that are portrayed. Yeah. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening as well. thank you for sticking around. It has been a very hectic fourth season.
It has been.
We appreciate your patience and your lovely eardrums. Thank you for your gorgeous eardrums as you listen to more sass. Obviously, if you haven't listened to any of our other podcasts, please go back on Spotify or on omnistudio.com/sass to listen to our other episodes, as well as our previous seasons where we delve more into some of the movies that we spoke about today.
Yes.
We've spoken about Riverdale, Heathers, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, also the biopics, Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocketman.
Plenty of content there.
Plenty of content. So if you want to find out more about those, go and find those episodes. In the description of all of our episodes, we talk about what entertainment pieces we're reviewing.
But until then, stay tuned for our part two of this episode coming very soon. And always remember to keep up with your screen, air and stage. In other words, Hannah,
stay sassy.
And we'll see you all very soon.